Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Headlines from Reuters. U.S. Navy says it prevented Iran from seizing tankers in the Gulf of Oman. These last hours. Conjoining with a story also from Reuters, Iran's Revolutionary Guards seized commercial ship in Gulf, according to the U.S. Navy. To discern the difference between one seizure and another, I welcome Benham Bentaleblou of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, a senior fellow. We're going to start with the Gulf seizures and what this means for the aggression of the Islamic Republic of Iran on water, and then move quickly to the question of the suspect nuclear weapons program, the negotiations with the U.S., and the so-called Iran deal light. Benham, a very good evening to you. On my way to the Iran deal, I come across these headlines out of London, Reuters, of the IRGC seizing one ship and being pushed back by the U.S. Navy on its attempts to seize two others, two tankers, one registered in the Marshall Islands, another registered in the Bahamas. Let us begin with the seizure immediately at hand. The U.S. Navy says it's smugglers. Is it routine for Iran's Navy or the IRGC to seize smuggle ships off of its coastline, much of which I'm guessing is black market? Good evening to you.
Very good evening to you, John. Always a pleasure to be with you. Unfortunately, this is part of a longer, well-established pattern of bad behavior from the Islamic Republic. We already know it is continuing to illicitly export oil. We already know that for over a decade, anytime there have been oil sanctions, the Iranians have tried to put the pressure on other oil producers in the region to produce less oil, which is including but not limited to taking some of their tankers hostage. After the Iran-China-Russia deal, Iran-China-Saudi deal in the spring, for example, the Iranians even took a Chinese tanker. So hopes that you can even have an external power dampen Iran's appetite to continue to engage in this bad behavior likely fell flat on its face. This instance is particularly important because it's one of the few policy wins the Biden administration had, because usually the Iranians continue to poke and prod and test. But because the Iranians had seized the ship in May, the administration beefed up maritime security presence there under the auspices of the international maritime security construct. And there were more ships available so they could respond to more distress calls. And there were even live rounds fired to warn away the Iranians the other day. First, the Iranian ultra-hardline press tied to the IRGC had said that, this was a myth, that this did not happen. And later on, after the U.S. put video out, the Iranians tried to spin the story using lawfare to say that, well, there had been a court order because one of these tankers had allegedly collided with an Iranian vessel. The non-Iranian vessels had said that no such thing had ever happened. But moral of the story is, with force, the Iranians backed down. And this is one of the few times they've done this in this region when the opposite has, in fact, proven to be true. One hopes the administration takes note and transfers this impression.
We have three different tankers. One, Tanzanian flagged, which the Navy says is possibly involved in smuggling. Two, the Marshall Islands and
the Bahamas.
Yes, thank you. Were legitimate, and the Navy intervenes in watches both, but intervenes in the second incident. Is this routine business now? I've not been following. In other words, is the Navy now the policeman on the beat for the Iranian bad acting?
Well, one would hope that the ebbs and flows of our force posture in the region would be sufficient to deter the Iranians, but it's not just our posture, it's our actions. So the beef up since May has allowed the Iranians to take away a positive impression in the very short term of our resolve. But the norm is that really since 2019, the Iranians have stepped up these attacks. Under the first 2 years of the Trump administration, the number of harassment attacks had fallen drastically when compared with the last 2 years of the Obama administration. But based on open source reports and even U.S. official statements, there have been about 20-ish of these sorts of harassment and attempted seizures over the past 2 years under Biden.
The Iran deal. It's the backdrop of everything when we talk about Iran. JCPOA 2015. Since then, there have been on-again, off-again reports about the Iran deal floating somewhere out of my reach. And when the Biden administration came in, it became something more substantive. Talks involving a man named Robert Malley, who has long been a major foreign policy agent for the Democrats, particularly. I remember him with the Kerry campaign of 2004. So Rob Malley now is in the news for something that isn't the Iran deal. He's been suspended for a security clearance problem. Is this substantive? Is this bureaucratic? Do we understand? Because Malley is the point man if there is to be any kind of Iran deal.
You know, there are so many more questions asked rather than answered right now. You know, the State Department dragged its feet on even confirming the story. You know, there's been allegations that he was suspended with pay for the past 2 months and then only recently suspended without pay. It is, to the best of our knowledge publicly, that, you know, during that time he had been meeting with hostage families still, but hadn't done congressional engagement, hadn't really done that much media. And in general, it's why when you saw the stories about a U.S.-Iran back channel forming this May in Oman, which was confirmed by the Omanis and other reporters who traveled to the region and diplomatic sources from the region in June, that it was the NSC, not the State Department. So it was Brett McGurk and the Middle East team at the National Security Council of the White House, rather than the special envoy for Iran at the State Department doing this. And this actually seems to be part of a larger trend of a downward slope in the White House's Iran policy position. If you remember during the campaign, they talked about a longer and stronger deal. Once negotiations commenced formally with the P5+1 for indirect negotiations with the Iranians, the goal became JCPOA renewal. Then the goal slid down even further to some kind of interim deal or freeze for freeze. Now we have reports that this alleged deal that was shaping up between the Iranians and the Americans through the Omanis as of May and June, based on what's publicly reported, is more of an informal arrangement. And it's very interesting that the Democratic policy point person on Iran nuclear deal making has been absent during this process. You know, to me, the Biden administration's Iran policy with Malley, without Malley, has problems. Obviously, this is going to create more short to medium term political issues in Washington than I think in terms of the U.S.-Iran relationship. But it's a story I keep your eye on because there could be a simple bureaucratic explanation or a really twisted policy and political explanation. All are valid given the silence coming from the admin.
When last we spoke, my memory is Benham. The new thinking is that there can be an arrangement that does not need the approval of the Congress, especially the Senate. Is that correct? Is that what the Oman connection was meant to create?
I believe if I'm going to intonate what I think the administration's behavior rather than its statements is telling us, is that they are seeking a way to get some kind of an agreement that puts off the worst of worst options before November 2024 to make it look like there's been an Iran problematic pause, meaning that the Iranians, who are so close to weapons-grade uranium anyway, don't go past that threshold, and that can be spun as an Iran policy win. And in so doing, whatever arrangement comes out of it, however informal, however by hook and by crook, however by waiver, and however by general license rather than through formal overt granted sanctions relief, would basically be a way around Congress. And as you know, when you keep Iranian policymakers in the light and U.S. policymakers in the dark, you're probably not doing something that great.
And the Iran deal in general is a question of how much and how long do you give Iran room? And one of the ways to limit is to show that you've got a strong hand. I believe there have been sophisticated exercises between with the U.S. and Israel involved, maybe other players, that warn very clearly there will be a response if Iran goes to a nuclear threshold or past the nuclear threshold. Is that all in the same room in the Biden administration, or are these different parts of the apparatus? One has a hammer, the other has a dove.
You know, one would hope that these are a hub and spoke, because ultimately honey and vinegar, carrot and stick, whatever you want to call it, need to be complementary. But I think the way the administration has done this is in a contradictory fashion. You may have heard, particularly since the past year, when there have been massive nationwide protests in Iran, when there's been more transatlantic sanctions on Iran, and when the Iranians have been overtly giving drones to the Russians to use against civilians in Ukraine, the administration talked about any kind of nuclear deal with Tehran being on the back burner. But the Oman channel proves that they were not looking for a back burner issue. They were looking for a back door to get this issue out of the limelight. And if you have a military drill on the front burner and then, you know, some kind of backdoor diplomacy, well, that backdoor diplomacy shows your desperation and dampens the signaling efficacy of any kind of combined regional military maritime aerial exercise. Now, I do commend the U.S. for deepening its military engagement, particularly with the Israelis in this space. But if you're Iran, you probably see this as a bit more theater.
Ukraine, the Ukraine war, we're going to turn to that. Ben and Ben Talibu has written a piece about Iran working with Russia for sophisticated weapon systems, and there will be surprises when we come back. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.